If that is the case, then any time any individual goes and digs gravel out of any place, why do they don't they have a ecology study? Just like they do for the Red Devil mine or the quartz mine, and if it comes under those mining laws, then that's the way. If they want to play the game, let's play the game all the way. I don't think that the sand and gravel should have ever, the subsurface should have ever been given to the regional corporations.
Well, that's the issue, as you yes. see it. Yeah.
And like I said, the 1971, the cutoff date, I have had very, very mixed feelings about that. I had no mixed feelings about the elderly people, because I felt that the elderly people, we could have given a time limit to pay them, given them some cash. We were forbidden to do that by the government. We could not distribute to the elderly people, which we definitely, the EAC Corporation, wanted to do, so that those people could realize something out of the land claims. We figured they would never live long enough to do it. And as it works out, not only the older ones, we lost a lot of the young ones that won't see anything out of it. And it keeps going like it is. I'll probably be the next one that won't see anything out of it. The sand and gravel issue was a very sore spot with me. Well, it, like I said, it is one of our very best sources of income in this area, but we cannot utilize it. We are being robbed blind here in Cordova on sand and gravel because the regional corporation, I don't know what they think about it, but they have made no effort to control it. They take a contractor's word that he takes so much sand and gravel. They didn't have anybody here to monitor it. And if you're familiar with contractors, they're just like lawyers. They get all you get out of you. But though that, I believe, is a very bad mistake made on the part of the land claims with the sand and gravel issue. And I think that it should be turned over to the village corporations. The subsurface, the village corporations should have the subsurface. They can control it better than it's just like Alaska used to be controlled from Washington, D.C. It's the same thing before we became a state. It's the same thing. The regional corporation is off in Anchorage. They don't know what's going on in Cordova, and yet they have control of a very large possible monetary income. The younger kids, like I started to say, I do very much have mixed emotion on that, because I feel that there had to be some way to control it, a cutoff date. But by the same token, I couldn't see how it could be done. And I don't think that was a way to do it, but I don't have a better answer for it either. I think the elderly people could have spoke for itself, but the younger people, there was no way. Outside of that, I believe that the land claims could have possibly worked a lot better had, not everything had been pushed through so absolutely fast and furious. Like I say, I would be willing to say that I was a little bit more knowledgeable about the land claims than a lot of people because I followed it pretty heavily. But the fact still remains that when you throw a big business or a small people into big business, which we are, anybody that has a land base like the EAC Corporation has 115,000 acres, there is no way you can consider them a small business person. Land has always been a native person's heritage. Not a piece of fenced-in land. Just the surrounding land wherever you wanted to go. If you wanted to go pick berries, you went and picked berries. As you said, Judge, you've been in numerous villages. They're probably a little bit more modern now than they were 30 years ago. New houses, all separated with definite distance between houses and roads and such. But I have been in all of the major villages at Prince William Sound, and there was not one village that I could think of that the houses were put into one square yard, one acre, or there were no boundaries between the houses. They build the houses where they wanted them. Nobody cared if they walked through their land. All of the English Bay, Port Graham, Chenega, the old Chenega, Tititlik, they all used to be that way. Those people had their houses, I want a house here. Okay, I'll put it up. Nobody cared. They just as long as they didn't tie right onto their house and like an apartment house. There were no land barriers as far as the people went. And basically there wouldn't be today if it wasn't for what they call rules and regulations, in that the people have to abide by just to try to become self-sufficient, so they say. The people in the past were much more self-sufficient than they ever will be under the Land Claims Act. I probably have a few more things to say, but I'm going to have to think about them a little while. And I don't... the other thing I meant to say, too, was when the land claims was first settled, the villages had to answer to the regional corporation and the federal government. And if the regional corporation didn't like what you were doing, they could say, no, you can't do it. The federal government didn't like what you were doing, they could say, no, you can't do it. How can you be self-sufficient under something like that, with people telling you what to do all the time? Thank you.
Just, Mr. Olson, thank you very much. Just before you put the microphone down, what's your feeling about the sale of shares in 1991, and what's your own attitude towards that?
My own attitude is there's no way that I'm going to sell my shares. They're going to my kids, but it so happens that I've been basically brought up in the white man's world, but my heritage is native. Of course, I don't know whether I could say that or not. I'm half Native and I'm half Dane. So what am I? But still, 1991, I believe, oh, is your hangman's noose for the native corporations. There, we only have a few more years left to do it. And most of the native corporations, even right now, has only been within the last 5 years that most of the villages and regional corporations were just really actually learning what they were doing and getting into it. So consequently, we have lost these 7 years, those 7 years that we were feeling our way in the dark. So now we are being pushed into another rush, rush, rush setup. That by the time 1991 comes, if the natives don't sell their land, then the lawyers are going to get it. Just fight this very same thing. So we're right back to where we started.
Could I ask you a couple of questions about the EAC Corporation? I think you were involved very much in its work.
Yes, I passed president of the EAC Corporation, board of directors.
How many shareholders are there in the EAC?
326. And that's the original number.
And you say that the EAC Corporation holds 150,000.
115,000. That's their entitlement under the.
And that's the land they've selected. Have they received it?
I believe that they just recently. We originally received 69,000 acres 5 years ago or so, tentative. And I believe we just got our last conveyance.
What kinds of business activity has the EAC Corporation been engaged in? What does it do? If somebody said, well, what does this corporation do? What would you say?
Our main holdings were originally we had we bought a marina, a boat storage yard. And then we built a trailer, small trailer court, and basically those were our two. And then just 2 years ago, we started up a building supply business.
And was it one of the objectives of the EAC Corporation to provide employment for shareholders, or was the objective to make a profit so as to pay dividends to the shareholders, or was it a mixture, or was it just such a struggle to kind of get going that you weren't thinking about all these other things?
Well, our basic intent always has been to make a profit and employ shareholders. And if you can make them both work, you're doing real well. But most of the people on the board of directors and our past officers were not that well business informed. We've had some pretty good directors that were very knowledgeable. We've had others that would hem and haw about this and that because we're spending money just typical, normal. They just plain. I personally myself was not educated enough to become a board of director. I realize that now. I didn't at the time. I learned a lot. And I learned over the past 10 years. And it's cost me to learn, but I learned. I feel much more confident in myself now than I did when I was first involved in the native claims.
How many shareholders are employed by EAC, approximately?
Just offhand, I could think of four. We're not in any business venture that gives us the capability of employing that many more shareholders, or any amount of shareholders at any one time. I was corrected, five.
What about resident and non-resident shareholders? What proportion of all your shareholders live here in town, and what proportion live in...
I think, if I remember correctly, I would say about a third of our shareholders live in town.
And the others live...
The others are scattered out Anchorage and South 48. If I remember correctly, the last time I looked it up, I think we had about 138 shareholders locally that lived here in town.
Yeah. Do you think that shareholders who live here in town might have a different attitude about selling their shares after 1991 compared to those shareholders who live in Anchorage or somewhere out of town?
I don't know. I believe that selling your shares are going to be an absolutely total personal thing. There's people that are greedy that want money right now. When 1991 comes, they'll sell their shares. But, and there's other people that it doesn't make any difference. Any corporation you have, not only Native, any corporation you have, you get 10 people together and form a corporation, and you say you can hold your shares for 5 years, and then you can sell them after that. There's a good chance that out of those people, that maybe two or three are going to sell theirs because they want the green dollar. They don't want a little piece of paper that doesn't say anything on it. They don't want a piece of paper that's not going to be, that you could take down to the store and say, give me $100 worth of groceries. That's what they want. Or they want the green dollar so they can live higher up on the hill, status symbol. Basically, the Native people are not status symbol people. And I'm not speaking just to these people, I'm speaking of all of the Eskimos, Indians, and Aleuts in Alaska. I believe I've said enough. Anybody else want the mic?
Well, thanks, Mr. Olson.
Me. Henry McCarker from EAC again. Not on the negative side, but on the maybe on a little on the positive side. Looking at the natives in as far as their progress, mainly around our area, it seems that we've had too many restrictions put against us. I think if probably we had to do it all over again, maybe if the federal government, state government, municipality or city government would be a little more lenient and give them a push. Give the people a push, a helping hand, rather than to restrict them. Because later on they probably got to realize the profits from the renewable resources, the resources providing that the markets would could come fall in, into place, I think everyone would realize the good out of it. But because of that number one fact, I think that they had too many restrictions pushed down the native people, and they should have given them a push them over the fence, say, here, go at her. They then, I think, would realize, everybody would realize something out of the resources that would come out of it. But no, it's because of, I don't know what it is, it's something that those restrictions, just like, don't push him out of the crab pot, hold him in there, keep him caught, don't let him go. They should have pushed him, helped him along. That's the way I look at it. On the positive side, we've been too restricted, held back. And that's as far as I'm concerned. We should, everyone, realize something out of the good that we've done.
Just a question, Mr. McCarka. How do most of the native people around here make their living? Fishing or?
Fishing, mostly. Most of the local natives are fishermen, even myself. That's all I've ever known my whole life. My grandparents, my dad, with the exception maybe a little, you know, something to carry on through the winter. There wasn't, all the years were never all real good years as far as fishing. There were some that the fish stocks went up and down. They're coming back now though, and everyone's kind of going good from it. But you know, it depends on how. But I don't think I think that everyone should realize something out of this. They should realize something. They're struggling. They're struggling for the feeling that they got everything there, but they're struggling. There's something that's holding them back. Somebody, I don't know if it's a government or the restrictions, is the only word that I can say. They're pulling them back. We don't want to see you go ahead. You stay right there. We're going to keep you in that crab pot. And that, to me, isn't the way to do it. They should push them out and say, hey, go ahead. Everybody will realize something. I don't care. Maybe the renewable resource, natural resources, everyone will realize something out of it. Even, you know, it's common sense. But that restriction is holding, keep you back in the pot. Don't push him out of the pot. Keep him there. And that's the way I feel. They should say, hey, go ahead, because we'll all realize something out of this in the end result. Thank you.
Thank you, McCarka.
Thank you. My name is Margie Johnson. I think the fact that you're here holding this hearing speaks highly of ANSCA, and I think that we should be most appreciative of the efforts of whoever put this together for you to go around to the villages and seek the input from the village people is most admirable. I also strongly feel that monuments should be built, and we should never forget the leaders who started the Native Claims Settlement Act in the beginning. People like Emil Noddy, Roger Lang, Willie Hensley, the Schaefers from the Nana region, and John Shively. I think it's very important that we remember these people always. They were literally plucked as fishermen from the village and put in Washington, D.C., and fought toe-to-toe, head-to-head.
Excuse me.
Hello. With some of the finest that the Eastern establishment had to offer. And a miraculous thing happened. Alaska Native people won. And I don't think that should ever be forgotten by anybody in this room, just what a remarkable accomplishment that was. Those people deserve a lot of credit. I think that some of the things that the corporations are doing are most admirable. Particularly the profit-making corporations are doing some very aggressive things. But corporations such as NANA, with their back to basics, help the elders, spirit camps, I think are particularly deserving of praise. They genuinely seem to have a feel for the elders there, and their spirit camps are most admirable. Let's see. I also feel that one of the things that the university could do for Alaska Native people, and working in conjunction with some of the nonprofit corporations, are to hold quarterly seminars on how to be an effective board person. I think Mr. Olson's point is well taken. No one knew how to be an effective board member. They were just plucked one day from one environment and put into another and said, there, run a corporation. I strongly feel that that seminar should be given on a frequent basis to teach not only existing board members, but those who aspire to be board members, how to be an effective board. And then once we get a board in, they should strongly and vigorously support their leadership. I think Chugach has a lot to be proud of with, if I might say, young Mr. Blatchford here. I think he does a commendable job, and people should stand behind their leaders. All too often I see, particularly on a local level, somebody gossips about so-and-so, I didn't get this or I didn't get that, and pretty soon a ball gets rolling and you get mad at your leaders, and you only keep people in about 3 years and then they're gone. That's not time enough for them to be effective. I also think that pamphlets, brochures, whatever, should be written about how much has been accomplished. EAC Corporation has accomplished a great deal. All too frequently we hear the negative sides of they haven't done this or they haven't done that. My goodness, in the time that EAC has been here, it's almost overwhelming what they've accomplished. I've never seen a private enterprise do so much. I certainly couldn't have. And I don't know many organizations given the same amount of resources that could do what EAC has done on a local level. Now, about 1991, I have some real strong feelings about that. I think that Native people are capable of governing themselves. They always have been, and they always will be. I firmly believe that they have the right of self-determination. If they choose to sell their shares, that is their right. I believe it could be a social taboo, and it could be looked down on, and they could govern themselves as they've always done. I'm a business person. I own a business, and I'm fully capable of making the decision when and if I choose to sell it. And I would defy anyone to tell me that I have to save it for 30 years because my grandchild may want it. It's impossible. My kids may want it and they may not want it. But that is my right to do as I choose with my business. And I think the corporations are the same way. Once they fall into the hands of the people are quite capable of determining what's best for them. So if there's one message I would like you to convey, Native corporations have done a lot and village corporations have done a lot, and there's a lot to be proud of. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
I forgot that a while ago that that day, when we settled up this, I'm going to stand up. I don't believe in sitting down. And when we got that, they counted us up, the Crinkets, only us. There's nine nationalities in Crinkets, and I'm one of them. I'm the only one that. Me and another girl from Yakutat that was in Kodiak when they were counting us up, how many people that were supposed to get that money. And that guy, I forgot who his name. We were in shipments in Kodiak, Julie Barnes and me. And they told me, as a, when the settlements come through, you're going to get, you're each going to get $195,000 apiece. He says, no half-breeds, only Clinkets genuine trinket. That's what they told me, because that there was too many mixtures. A lot of people, there was only a fist fight in Kodiak. That same night, somebody was saying there, well, this people were outside Indians, but they claim they're Coquitlam. They don't even know what Coquitlam means. And that's when they told them. I said, when the settlements come through, there's no half-breeds. It's going to be full because there's too many outsiders coming in. That's what they told us that down here too. Only half here, they said, half-breeds only. Not quarter breeds. All of it changed. Now, where is it? Where's my part of the money I was supposed to get? Everybody's having a good time with us now, but me. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I don't think I really need this because I'm speaking without a microphone. You need it for the, okay. My name is Agnes Nichols. I'm the chairman of the Native Village of EAC, and I'm also a shareholder in the Chugach Regional Corporation, as well as the EAC Corporation. I'm a mother of 10, and we are all shareholders, except for two of my daughters. Unfortunately, they had signed up for the land claims, but they died before the land claim settlement came about. I have 15 grandchildren. Of those, only one is registered to the Tetitlik Village Corporation. So I feel an injustice somehow that my grandchildren were kind of left out of the whole Settlement Act, because they're all classified as natives and always have been. I've been involved in the native land claims from the very first day that the Chugach Native Association in this town was involved in the land claims. I walked into a room where they were going to have a meeting, and they said, good, we got a secretary. So I have been involved all this time. I am now a director for the EAC Corporation. We had a vacancy, and I was selected to be the board member. I did take a rest for some few years because I just didn't feel that I would do any benefit. I thought that maybe because of the things that were happening that I would better serve the people in the capacity as chairman of the village council, so that we could do work with the social service part that was necessary for the welfare of all the native people in this area. The native land claims, as I felt, isn't really what it was all set out to be. I attended all the Senate hearings that we had in Anchorage, and we brought some of our elders there. We got nickels and dimes and quarters, and sometimes a dollar bill, and sometimes even $5 that was sent towards, put towards by the native people here in this town to send two representatives to the Senate hearings in Anchorage. We had a lawyer that even offered us his credit card so that we could eat one time when we kind of didn't have enough money to go and do what we were supposed to do. I think so many times of all the people that supported the native land claims and who now, because they're elderly, aren't really going to benefit that much. As the village of EAC, we've tried to benefit them with housing and social service, so kind of supplement a little bit what the land claims had promised them. And as Margaret said, they promised them lots of money. They were going to be rich. They were going to be able to take it easy, and everybody was going to go to this utopia that was like a pie in the sky, that was going to be there because of the wonderful land that and things that were going to be happening because of the land claims. But it didn't happen. I work in social service, and one of the social service agencies denied one of our native people some services, because after all, you did get your land claim money. The land claim money was $83. And if you ever go to the store and buy groceries, $83 is maybe one bag and a sack of potatoes. And that's not buying all the luxuries either, that's just the necessities. And so we try to explain to her that $83 didn't go very far, that $83 did not supply this mother with her two little children, the necessary milk and bread that was necessary for them. So the land claims that had many ways was misrepresented in the different phases of social service and the state things that the state had given to some of these people that were in need. The people went from a subsistence economy where they went hunting, they went fishing, they picked berries, they ate herbs, they did everything else, and then of course they had then they went into a money economy. We set up the corporations where everybody was supposedly a business manager, and they weren't. They had no business education at all. Fishermen went in. So fishermen do have businesses because they have a lot of stock. They have lots of equity. They have their boats, their nets. But it was a different kind of economy that was set up. And the business community roundabout that were big businesses watched as each little business corporation floundered along the way, then came up, picked up their feet, and they started all over again. Then and it wasn't just in our area here, but all over. And I have read many of the business papers to see that this one was near bankruptcy and had to be bailed out by somebody else. Some who had the expertise made it, and others were still struggling even today. You heard Mr. Evanoff from Chiniga, who says they don't even have a staff to take care of their corporation. And so it goes on as we struggle. And as Mr. Olson said, it has been a learning process. You learn as you go, and you make mistakes, and some of them drastic mistakes. And some board of directors may not have always been thinking of the business and the things that it had to do. And there were many seminars on how to try to become better board members. And I myself am classified as a professional board person because I have been on so many boards that, and I have had so much training. And and even then it's hard to sit and make a decision and to try to deal with big business and big and banks and corporations and try to struggle along trying to get a loan from here and you borrow from Peter to pay Paul, and it's a learning process. Land claim settlement was such a force that also caused bitterness and battles among families. Among your friends who used to be your great, great friends and who now, because you didn't exactly agree with them the way that they felt that the situation should have been or that the policy or things should have been handled, are now your enemies. I found that out in my own situation where as I made an opinion known, my own opinion, then those people didn't really want to talk to me anymore. And these are people that have been together for years and years and lived together and fought together and cried together and helped each other, and all of a sudden they become enemies just because there wasn't the same thought that each one had. Not only that, there was in the corporations. You go to a business, supposedly business corporation, where everybody was fighting and hollering at somebody else. I'm also classified as the spiritual leader among my people. And it's real hard to ask the blessing or whatever it is over a corporation where everybody's growling at each other. And it's amazing to know that you pray that everybody will have that same spirit that was originally there of togetherness. The land claims did bring a lot of people together for a common cause, which was to be a business and to try to make money for everybody else. That's one of the positive parts. Not only was there animosity among themselves, but among the non-natives or the Caucasians that were around, because it became your land and what happens to my land and them and those. It became a battle of words too, that this is mine, no sir, that's yours, and if you own all that duck hunting property, are you going to post a sign and a sentry there to say whether I can come and go? It became a real, I can't describe the feeling that you have when you think that these people, you know, they've hunted here all this time, and then all of a sudden you become the bad guy because he thinks that you're not going to let him go through anymore. But how can you police thousands and thousands and thousands of acres? It take the whole native population, the state of Alaska, just to go out here and police our wetlands where all the ducks and geese are. It was a feeling, boy. But at one of the hearings we had with about Chugach, and that's what it was. It was a feeling among everybody where it became a battle with words. And it caused wrong impressions and wrong feelings among everybody. And so those are some of the things that were brought out. In 1991, I don't know whether, the Lord willing, that I'll be here that long. I mean, I'm one of the people that are now going to become senior citizens, not too long. But I do have a granddaughter that I willed my shares to in that event. But it's a real question as to what we are going to do with that. There's also going to be taxation. In the EI Corporation, we were granted 2-point-some acres of land. Some of the elderly people have sold it because they have medical problems and they can't go out there and build a place to live because they can't be that far away from the city. So many of the people have become city acclimated. You know, we're going to live in the city, and there's so many things that they don't want to leave, as well, medical for one thing. And so those are some of the things that it's really hard to make a decision. I really don't know what kind of a decision I will make in 1991. And I think it's a consensus among a lot of people. A lot of young people don't understand what is really going on. Oh, what's with 1991? We need to educate. I also teach two years ago I decided it was time to become a teacher. I teach in community college in Native Arts and Heritage, and one of the things I do teach is land claims. It's amazing how many people didn't know about land claims. I even gave them a test, and it's amazing.
To both Native and non-Native people? It's
to the community college, yes, Native and non-Native. And the first class I had was all school teachers. It was really great. Here I was teaching school teachers. It was a good feeling. But it's amazing how many people don't know anything about the land claims. They don't know how many corporations they are. They don't know why the corporations were started. They don't know why the land claims were started in the first place. And so we get to take them through a process of land claims. Then we go through culture communication. Then we go through a cultural enhancement, and it's just a kind of trying to get people oriented into the why the land claims and why we're here. I mean, we live in a community. We live rather well together, I think. And I was brought up in this community, and I'm also Danish and Aleut. My mother was Aleut, and my father was Danish. And so it was, but I was brought up in the native culture. And so, but it's one of those things that you think about, but it's hard, one of those hard decisions to make, as well as my family. What their decisions are to be in 1991, when they're going to be taxed. Any improvement on that 2 acres will be taxed. We build a house, and it's going to be taxed. Whether the city of Cordova goes all the way out to the Harkney Bay subdivision or not, it's one of those things that may be in the future. It's been talked about for the past 20 years about becoming a borough and annexation. One of the fellows was talking about a land base for the village of Viac. We did have a land base, but it was annexed into the city of Cordova in 1971 because they needed a tax base. And so therefore, and even though 98% of the people voted against it, it still was annexed into the city of Cordova, the village of Viac, as a quote, old town. And so therefore, we don't have what you classify as a land base. We do have people, we have a tribal facility, a piece of property that the tribal facility is sitting on is the original village of Viac. So therefore, we do have, 200 by 250 feet, piece of land that is called the village of Viac. And so, but these are things that we have to look at in the land claims. There may have been some positive things, but they're overrided by those, by the negative things that the land claims has brought. And I could probably go on for hours, but I know there's some other people that would like to testify. So.
Yes, could I ask you a couple of questions,
sure.
Mrs. Nichols?